And welcome to another fabulous podcast from your friends. And it's take two, Mark.
Is it?
Yes. And it's Christmas week. And have you done all of your shopping?
No.
How much of your shopping have you done?
Not enough.
Have you done any shopping?
I've thought about it.
You've thought about your shopping.
That is, that for me, that is part of the...
So traditionally, when will you get round to actually exchanging cash for a present?
The good lady ceramicist... No, that's your wife.
Yes. Is there something you're trying to tell me? You've got the good lady professor. Well, you did, unless you've exchanged like Alan Rickman-like.
This is like you forgetting what gender child two is. Uh-huh. And, the good lady professor, her indoors, will not be receiving a bag of briquettes from the 24-hour garage. I know. I have made some moves forward.
What does that mean?
It means I've ordered some stuff and it hasn't yet arrived because of the postal strike.
Yes.
And it means there's also some other stuff that I have to do physically in person.
You mean shop? You actually have to physically
go
to a shop.
Yeah, but shopping can contain online. What most people do, well, the good lady professor her indoors has everything organised. It's like spreadsheets and it's all like, it's like incredible. I, you know, last minute panic. And then she sends me a text. God bless her, which always says the same thing. It's lovely. It says, all I want for Christmas is you, but also a list of CDs that she likes.
So in the words of Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, not only, but also.
Not only, but also.
So you're fine. However, these would be quite nice.
Yes, that's right.
So she actually wants compact discs for Christmas.
Yeah, we're an offline family. We like to play compact discs. We've actually got a car that's got a compact disc player in it.
Do you not stream?
We can stream, yeah, but the internet in my house is at very best sketchy. And so we have to be ready for all offline possibilities.
And what are you saying to your fam that you would like? What is the number one thing?
I mean, Linda always gets me ties, which is...
I thought you were going to say tights.
She always gets me tights.
Now that would be... No wonder no one's welcome around your house. Christmas tights, dear.
She gets me tights because... Have I not told you this? We were watching In the Mood for Love, okay, which I love. We were watching it together. And I said, this is the best Thai movie I've ever seen.
What happens in that film?
It's a love story, but it's a love story that kind of doesn't happen. It's a love story in waiting. You should see it. It's wonderful. But the clothes are amazing. And anyway, we've just spoiled the joke. When we were watching it, I said to Linda,
thank you, Hannah, for bringing us drinks. Hannah's the producer. Just getting in there before Mark says randomly thank you.
Thank you.
Carry on.
I feel that this story has kind of lost its impetus.
Well, Christmas. It's like Christmas. Fine. Trying to tell a story around the table.
We were watching the movie and I said to Linda, this is the best Thai film I've ever seen. And she said, it's from Hong Kong. I went, no, Thais, as in Thais. So ever since then, she buys me for Christmas some ties that are like the ties in The Mood for Love, and that has become a tradition.
And are they thin ties or kipper ties? I'd like to see in a kipper tie.
No, you wouldn't. I have the most fantastic selection of In the Mood for Love style ties you've ever seen.
Dear Hans Gruber and Franz Gruber.
Very good.
Alex Crockford from Cambridge is sending this one.
Okay.
The festive season is never short of movie-related banter, from the annual debates about whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie and who was a more convincing Dickens, Gonzo or Dan Stevens, to everyone and their dog compiling their top 10 lists of favourite Christmas films. But I would be interested in getting the views of your esteemed listeners, other esteemed listeners, obviously, on the weirdest pronunciations they've ever come across in a Christmas movie. So this is very, okay. It's a very specific genre. For me... It is hard to top, so this might be the end of the feature.
Okay.
Sir Ralph Richardson, one of the finest actors of the 20th century, who put in a magnificent show in The Holly and the Ivy, battling family heartbreaks and a roving Irish accent, but getting uncharacteristically unstuck on a particular word that doesn't often come up in festive fare.
Go ahead.
Mathematicians, sun worshippers, and the first to discover the value of guano as a manure.
What?
Well, what he meant was guano as a manure.
And he says guano.
He says guano.
And that's this is what he says.
This is Sir Ralph Richardson. Can we have that again? Can we play it again, please? Ralphie?
Mathematicians, sun worshippers, and the first to discover the value of guano as a manure.
It's clearly a word he's not come across before.
Yeah. Has he never read Tintin?
And so he's just saying it phonetically. This must be guano. And he's Sir Ralph Richardson, so no one is going to say, Sir Ralph. Could you just, do you know that?
Have I ever bored you with my story about Christopher Lee and piranha?
Before you tell us that, Alex, thank you very much, Dee, for the email. I'm not sure that there are going to be any other mispronounced words in a Christmas movie, but if there are, let us know. Let us know your story now.
First documentary that I ever made, and it was for Channel 4, and I did the interviews and I wrote the script, but I ended up getting credited as, like, consultant or something. Anyway.
You're over that, are you now, the insult?
Not at all.
No.
No.
Grudge carried.
Yep. Anyway, Christopher Lee was narrating it, and I wrote the narration. No, I think technically I rewrote the narration. I wrote it. Anyway, there was a
this
bit...
This feels like a very complicated contractual situation.
Contractually, I didn't do anything.
Lawyers assemble!
Anyway, Christopher Lee had to read this thing out in which he said piranhas, okay, because it was the James Cameron film Piranha, and he said piranha. And I was in the control room. I said, terribly sorry, Sir Christopher, I think you said piranha. He said, yes. I said, it's piranha. No. I said, what do you mean? He said, the word is correctly pronounced piranha. And I said,
if you say so.
Okay, but the film, the American film, is called Piranha. He went, it is called piranha. I went, okay, could you just say piranha?
It's a classic bit of production. I understand what you're saying. Absolutely right. Just for completion.
Just for completion. Just for an alternative. Could you just give us...
Like I'm asking you to.
A piranha.
Yes. And did he give you a piranha?
Well, in my head, I seem to remember that he didn't, and we ended up editing the word, but I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure that he must have just gone piranha.
Well, in which case... we could expand this outside of just Christmas movies. People who should know better getting words wrong when they should have been directed. So clearly Christopher should have said piranha.
And that's, you know, what's it, Benedict Cumberbatch, who can't say ping-wing. And Benedict Cumberbatch narrated a documentary about penguins, but it turns out he can't say penguin.
That was a bad booking,
wasn't it? He says ping-wing. He literally every single time, and it must be about 100 of all the actors, you had to get the one
I have 600
who can't
on this roster.
Say the word penguin. And the documentary is about penguins.
Correspondence at codemail.com. Stuart Ingham in Aylesbury. On the subject of board game cinema crossovers, it should be noted that creator of the classic board game Risk, originally titled La Conquête du Monde,
The Conquest of the World,
was French filmmaker Albert Lamorisse, who also wrote, produced and directed The Red Balloon, the only short film to win an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay.
What?
The creator of Risk was Albert Lamorisse, who wrote, produced and directed The Red Balloon, the only short film to win an Oscar. It clocks in.
Is that true?
34 minutes, so approximately one-tenth the length of an average game of Risk, which is quite right, because it goes on forever.
The guy behind The Red Balloon invented Risk.
So says Stuart Ingham in Aylesbury.
My mind is blown.
It is true. It's just been confirmed by the voice
in my
head.
The voice in my head as well. I heard the voice in your head.
I've been working too long.
It's really...
hearing the same voices.
Sharing imaginary friends.
Has Peter from Germany turned up in your in your life? Blimey. So you know that story from a week 10 days ago, about the sort of coup attempt in Germany.
Yes, which they clamped down upon.
Yes, so they
correctly
did.
So. But Heinrich
the 13th, who was this kind of strange aristocrat who was supposed to be the ringleader of it all, apparently his real name is Peter, and someone took a photograph and said,
this is Peter from Germany.
This Peter from Germany thing has gone too far.
So there you go.
But he wasn't Peter from Germany because he wasn't wearing the right kind of velveteen jumper.
Right, okay. And he didn't have a handbag. Because didn't Peter from Germany have a handbag?
No, that was... that was just me that had a handbag.
You should have a handbag.
I had a handbag full of marbles. It wasn't just it wasn't just any old handbag. It was a handbag full of marbles.
Right. And did you ever mislay them so people could say Simon has lost his marbles?
No, I did. I got my leg stuck in the railings of the Scottish Crown Jewels, Alloa Castle.
Hang on, is this a joke handbag, or is this a true thing?
No, it's a true thing.
You got your leg stuck in the railings.
In the railings.
Railings of what?
Well, in my head, we were in Alloa Castle looking at the Scottish Crown Jewels, but I'm thinking someone is going to say the Scottish Crown Jewels aren't in Alloa. But the bit that's right is Alloa Castle. Someone's going to say there isn't a castle.
How did you get your leg stuck in the railings?
I was trying to climb in. Obviously, if you're the railings, you might as well put your leg through them. Come on, what else are you going to do?
This is so brilliant. And how did they get you out? Did the fire brigade have to come?
No, that was when I was at university.
What?
The fire brigade had to come when we were stuck in the shower.
Sorry, how do I not know this?
It was Christmas.
I'm so excited, I'm actually stamping my feet under the table. This is
Roots Residences, part of the university accommodation.
Roots Residences.
At Warwick University. And then we had a corridor kind of Christmas dinner. And then someone said, should we play sardines? So we did. And on a corridor where there were just like a bunch of rooms, a kitchen and a shower, there weren't many places to hide.
Right.
So the first place to go was the shower, which is like kind of two kind of phone box sized spaces.
Yeah. Shower sized spaces.
Yeah, where 10 of us got in. And then the door jammed.
Well, the door shut behind you and it was an open indoor.
Well, whatever, the bolt thing broke. Yeah, so we were stuck in there. They had to call the fire brigade. And the Coventry Fire Brigade came out.
I bet they were delighted.
Yeah, well, they thought it was very funny.
Did they?
But what they did say was, are you okay in there? So we said, well, we'd quite like to get out. And then they said, okay, what they had their axe. They had an axe. They were going to smash the door jam, okay? Yes. But they said, okay, stand back. I'm thinking, there are 10 of us in the very small space. The ability to stand back is not one of the things that we were able to do.
Did they see the funny side?
They did, yeah.
They did?
Well, they did once they let us out. We got fined by the university. We had to sort of pay for the door jam, which seems on balance fair enough. And all the newspapers, they put it on the kind of the wire. And the Sun wanted to know if we were clothed, to which the answer was yes. We were just having a game of sardines.
But the Sun would have liked it so much more if you were naked.
Yeah, but we weren't.
No.
So that was the end of that. So the fire brigade did have to rescue me then, but not at Alloa Castle.
The Sun didn't reproduce it by mocking up a photograph with a bunch of scantily clad lovelies stuck in a shower just to as an aid memoir.
No, but you know, that might happen again at some stage in the future.
Wow.
Anyway, enough frivolity.
What wild student days you had. Do you know what I was doing while you were jamming up the shower at Warwick University?
You were probably on the barricades.
Exactly. I was smashing the state.
Yeah. How did that go, the smashing of the state?
How's it looking at the moment?
Well, we've got some ads to read in a moment, so it's going quite well.
In that case, yes, it went brilliantly.
James Halley, who's in County Tipperary. Whilst listening to your discussion about film-related board games in a previous Take Two episode, subject got me thinking about cinema-adjacent video games. Cinema-adjacent video games. And the prospect of hearing Mark's take on them. I've loved listening to your podcast in both of its iterations for many years now. And whenever a video game adaptation comes around, such as Justin Cazell's Assassin's Creed adaptation,
yes,
you and Mark have always expressed your admiration for this medium of storytelling, even without playing the games. With that said, I would like to recommend some video games for Mark to play and review for this podcast and or the YouTube channel that are just as cinematic as the movies and the TV shows that you talk about in your show. Here are a few titles that I believe Mark will enjoy. You ready?
Yes.
The Last of Us Part 1.
Okay.
This story follows Joel Miller, who is tasked with escorting the young Ellie across a post-apocalyptic, you debate about the United States, and defend against cannibals, they're in every show.
Toto Coelho.
Against cannibalistic creatures infected by a mutated strain of fungus. Every strain of fungus is mutated, don't you think? Considered one of the greatest games ever made, The Last of Us Part 1 is an unrelenting, heart-pounding, emotional juggernaut of a story.
Okay.
And is a wonderful point of entry for Mark into this medium.
I'm on board.
If that was not enough to convince you to play the game, Craig Mazin, creator of Chernobyl, is the showrunner of the HBO adaptation of the story with Pedro Pascal.
Craig Mazin, creator of Chernobyl and The Hangover.
Yes. So, on the one hand, and on the other.
On the other.
My final recommendation is Ghost of Tsushima. This story follows Jin Sakai, a young samurai on a quest of
Tsushima Island.
During the first Mongol invasion of Japan. Ghost of Tsushima is a technical marvel and a brutal, gorgeous tale of vengeance, morality, and the internal conflict of a man who has lived by the samurai code for his whole life, who must stoop to the level of the enemy to protect his family and home. Which of those are you going to go for?
Last of Us.
The Last of Us Part 1.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating.
Apparently, The Last of Us Part 2 is the equally acclaimed sequel to the...
No.
Yes. Just in case.
Thanks for pointing
so don't that. Start at two. Start at one.
Go, I don't know who these people are. Why? You know, there is an interesting question. Avatar came out so long ago that there are potentially people who could go and see Avatar 2, The Way of Water, who weren't born when Avatar came out, right? And somebody said, do you need to have seen Avatar to understand the plot? And the answer is, no.
Who's Tom Robinson?
I'm sorry, did that pierce you to the very, you know, heart as much as it did me?
It's a regular occurrence, though, isn't it?
Is it?
I think so. Once you get to be ancient. Once you are the ancient of days. Dear Marley and Marley, I recall in the penultimate episode of your previous incarnation, there was a discussion around watching feel-good movies at this festive time of year. One lady wrote in to say that her family always sat down to watch the Dennis Quaid baseball drama, The Rookie.
The Rookie.
My family are also big foam hand-wearing fans of this tragically underrated gem
Where
of a film.
Where did that start?
I don't know. Wasn't it Kenny Everett?
Well, Kenny Everett did it as he was the gospel singer,
wasn't he,
with the big pointy things. But then he rather blotted his copybook by doing the Tory party conference and saying, let's bomb Russia.
Hmm. Yeah, on balance, that wasn't a good thing.
No. Anyway.
Let's cook, let's kick Michael Foot's stick away. That's what he said.
That's the other one. He said both of those things. That's right, yes.
Both of them you'll have to ask your parents.
Yeah.
Anyway, the email continues. I have to say that alongside the Gene Hackman basketball drama Hoosiers, this is my favourite sports film. Well, I suppose Bull Durham was pretty good, and Chariots of Fire. But hey, The Rookie is just great, so give it a go.
Chariots of Fire, of course, turns up in the current series of The Crown because it's a Fyre production. So Dodie Fayed is one of the... Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so if you have... We'll get these in time for next week. Suggestions for non-Christmas films that make you feel good.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So if you've just had it with all the tinsel and ludicrousness of it, but you still want to feel good and have a smile on your strained and ached face, then we would like to know your film suggestions.
Strained and ached.
Ached face, yes. It's riven with achedness.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. It's old English from the Anglo-Danes. They said, have some mulled cider. Your face
is riven with achedness. I think. Sit like and that. I shall read you Sir Gawain and the Green Knight in his original
achedness.
Middle English.
Correspondence at CurbanAmerican.com.
Hrothgar.
It's time for Pretentious Moi.
Oh, dear.
This is where I read out a paragraph from one of Mark's reviews, and Mark has to guess the film that he has written about.
Okay, before you even start, can I say, firstly, can we please have a little bit more text? And secondly, can we have some context? Because at the moment, it's 7-4, right?
The people 7, Mark 4.
The last few weeks, there's been nothing to hang on to at all.
Well, Catherine Noble writes, Mark, it's not you. It's not that you are getting worse at this game. It's just that Simon Poole, who's not here because apparently there's a train strike. But you managed
I'm
to come
here.
In. Yes.
I came from Southampton.
Has made it harder for you. He's enjoying torturing you on air way too much.
Is he listening to this? Is he? Good.
It's not some. It's sometimes him and it's sometimes Hannah, the voice in my head. Which is fine, except that when I wake up in the morning, I can still hear Hannah saying, "Come on, hurry up. We've got another 16 takes to get through."
Then you've got to go and do Greatest Hits Radio.
Okay, that's true. So let's have can we have the tension bed, please?
Now, all right, okay.
So in this section, there is a reference to a director, a cinematographer, another movie altogether, and a geographical area. I've replaced the director's name with Gerald Thomas, the guy who did the Carry On films.
Yes.
The cinematographer I've replaced with Lord Snowden. Okay. The other movie altogether I've replaced with Richard Curtis's Love Actually.
Okay.
And the final geographical area I've inserted is Croydon.
You haven't, so I haven't even got a geographical area to hang on to.
No.
Heaven's sake.
So.
Okay.
Here we go. Gerald Thomas is...
Okay, slowly.
Gerald Thomas.
So that's somebody else.
Gerald Thomas's regular cinematographer, Lord Snowden.
Okay, so some director, some other director's regular cinematographer, somebody else.
Who brought such urgent verisimilitude to Richard Curtis's Love Actually.
Okay, who brought such urgent verisimilitude to a film which isn't Love Actually. So that's you're putting that in as a joke, so it'll be some tough, gritty drama.
Once again, lends a documentarian's eye to the drama, using vintage lenses to capture multi-angle digital footage, largely shot around Croydon, not Croydon, which interweaves seamlessly with archive material.
Oh, I know what this is. I know what this is.
There you go. Hang on. So wait a minute, because before you give us your final answer, I know you know what it is because it's very, very specific. So it's, do you want me to read it again before
you
absolutely
certain? Yes, go on. Yes, yes.
Gerald Thomas's regular cinematography, Lord Snowden, who brought such urgent verisimilitude to Richard Curtis's Love Actually, once again lends a documentarian's eye to the drama using vintage lenses to capture multi-angle digital footage largely shot around Croydon, which interweaves seamlessly with archive material. Mark, what is the film you have reviewed?
Okay, so I'm gonna fill these gaps in.
Okay.
Okay, so the cinematographer...
Lord Snowden...
is Barry Aykroyd.
Correct.
And he's Paul Greengrass's cinematographer.
That's right. So that's the...
So Paul Greengrass's regular cinematographer, Barry Aykroyd,
who brought such urgent...
verisimilitude to... Well, I mean, any of Paul Greengrass's movies, so I don't know what that one is.
Well, no, it's not. It's not a Paul Greengrass. So that's why it's a different movie altogether. Richard Curtis's Love Actually. So it's another director's and writer's film.
Okay, but it's Barry Aykroyd, isn't it, who I'm talking about? Paul Greengrass's regular cinematographer, Barry Aykroyd, who brought such urgent verisimilitude to something else that he did, which I don't know what it is.
Yes.
But it's not Love Actually, obviously.
No.
Read the rest of it.
Multi-angle digital footage.
Largely shot
around...
With vintage, but this thing about vintage lenses, read that, it's that.
Once again, lends a documentarian's eye to the drama, using vintage lenses to capture multi-angle digital footage, largely shot around Croydon, which is...
Well, the film is Detroit, so it must be largely shot around Detroit.
Boston.
Oh, because they didn't film Detroit, but it's Catherine Bigelow's Detroit, isn't it?
So it's Bigelow and Bowles' The Hurt Locker is the reference.
Mark Bowles, the screenwriter. Yeah,
who wrote it. And Catherine.
But it's Detroit, isn't it?
It is just Detroit.
Boom!
So it's Greengrass, Aykroyd, Bigelow, Bowles,
and Hurt
Locker, Boston.
What was the film to which he lent the verisimilitude that you said was Love Actually?
Bigelow and Bowles' The Hurt Locker.
Oh, Because he was Paul Greengrass, but he did The Hurt Locker as well. Fine, I'd forgotten that. Okay,
You've clawed one back. There you go. See, you can feel better about it now. You like the feature.
Now, come on,
again.
Admit it, you are slightly impressed.
Well, what you had there was, you had tools to work with.
I had tools to work with. I had context.
There you go. One frame back. Well,
I'd forgotten that Detroit wasn't shot in Detroit. It's largely shot around Boston.
That must be very annoying.
That must be very annoying to the people and to the Bostonians.
This week's one frame back, we're looking at films that feature ballet, obviously inspired by Mark's review of Nutcracker and the Magic Flute. Well, I mean, loosely. Shall we say?
I don't think very much was inspired by my review of that film.
Someone who appears to be known as Beach Bone. Thanks, Beach. It has to be Black Swan for me, but also Audition and a couple of smaller films like Diamond Souls and Girl. I remember very well watching Girl as one person in the audience actually fainted at the end of the film. You know your film hits different with that kind of reaction. Actually, I think that's quite good. Movies that you've been in where someone has fainted.
Oh, I can do two.
Go on. Exorcist.
Exorcist, yeah. Which my a friend of mine... It passed out during the arteriogram sequence and I had to carry him out. And then, as I've said a million times, Gaspar Noé's Irreversible, in which in the opening sequence when the guy gets his head stoved in with a fire extinguisher, guy in front of me passed out and I had to pull him out of the cinema. So both times I have carried somebody
out of the cinema. One of the emergency services.
I am. And I confess that it makes the rest of the screening so much more exciting.
Gaz Evans, The Red Shoes, please. If I had to pick three to watch, it would be The Red Shoes
three times.
Mohamed Shakir, can only be Black Swan, which my wife thought was a retelling of Swan Lake. She was very quickly surprised and terrified with us having to watch a rom-com afterwards to repair some frayed nerves. Campanzee says The Nutcracker and The Four Realms is light and fluffy, but has a beautiful ballet sequence with the first black female principal ballet dancer in US history. To show representation of diversity like that to children in a mainstream movie should not be remarkable, but it still is. Jessica Poynton, is there enough dancing in White Crow to qualify? I think there is.
You loved that film, didn't you?
In animation, I love Ballerina, which has a lot of dancing in it, even though the music at the end is odd. And, of course, Billy Elliot. So, Mark, what is your choice for this week's One Frame Back?
Well, I would go for the Red Shoes because I do think, I mean, I know it's a safe answer, but it's just so brilliant, and the colour of it is so fantastic, and it's got real vision, and it's got that kind of, I mean, because I have to say ballet always scares me slightly, but I've been to see a few ballets live, not many, and I'm always kind of struck by the thing about the difference between, the whole point about ballet is it gives you the impression that people are weightless and that they're flying, but you know that what you're looking at is people doing things that are incredibly painful and require unbelievable muscle tone. And so there's this sort of, this disconnect between what it looks like, which is like a, you know, meringue, and what it actually is, which is huge muscles and sinews and tendons doing unbelievably difficult things. And I find it quite hard to watch as a result of that. And The Red Shoes, of course, taps into all of that. I mean, as does Black Swan. You like Black Swan as well, didn't you? I think with the Black Swan thing, when people got annoyed about Natalie Portman when she didn't do her own ballet dancing, you go, wow. And you know, in 2001, they didn't go into space.
Okay, so they're all generally available, I'm sure. You can
available on Widely.
That's right, our favourite channel.
Your favourite channel is Pluto.
Well,
you said it was something that you discovered that was available on Pluto.
Just being advertised. There's another channel that I haven't... I need to...
I just think it's really funny something is available on Pluto. It's like...
It's a little hardcore.
Exactly.
And next week, Mark is going to be talking about Pale Blue Eye.
Yes.
So...
Do we have a guest from that?
Edgar Allan Poe is sort of like an Edgar Allan Poe origins story, starring Christian Bale, our friend Christian Bale, who was very interesting on the show a few weeks back.
You did a great interview with him, didn't you?
Well, it was the first time I interviewed Christian Bale, I really liked him. And it was amazing hearing him talk in his actual voice.
Yeah, and that was for that film which did no business at all.
For Amsterdam.
Amsterdam, that's right.
But if you're going to do an interview, there's so much to talk about in that movie.
He spoke very eloquently about it.
So, given that it's Edgar Allan Poe, Pale Blue Eye, how about your recommendations for American Gothic horror mystery? I mean, that sounds
nice and broad.
Fun.
Nice and broad.
American Gothic horror, please, for next week. correspondence@coenandmayer.com. And it'll be a suitable kind of, on the one hand, Christmas, the other week, Gothic horror and death and disease and limbs, incision, and separation. For Take It or Leave It, You Decide. It's been suggested by dozens of people, but here is female pipe smoker Ruby. Mark and Simon. Soy vanguardista.
Soy eres es somos soy son. I am vanguardista. Soy means I am.
Is it?
Yeah. In Spanish, soy eres es somos soy son.
Well, that saved a lot of time. And MTL, though FTE. I wondered what you all might think of the new Western series, The English.
The English.
For your Take It or Leave It, You Decide section. I just finished the 6 episodes on iPlayer. I found it stirring, moving, and gut-punchingly Moorish. Recommended anyway. I love listening to your witterings as I work, drawing pictures for money. Please, the more takes you do, the better for all concerned. This is precisely what the corporate overlord says. Maybe Ruby Olivia Fresson is the corporate overlord.
That's right. Soy Simon Paul.
We're working for Ruby. And Ian Young in Cambridgeshire, because Hugo Blix, the and then it just starts.
Because
Hugo Blix, the English, is stunning. Apart from Sid James as the Rumpo Kid, there were around a dozen British Euro-Westerns filmed in Spain that never set the world on fire or found a form like the Italian pictures. For some reason, British Westerns resurfaced in the 21st century, and they were really interesting. The Claim, Grey Owl, The Proposition. The English is a riveting but bleak existential Western evoking The Searchers, not the band, The Sergios and A Man Called Horse. That should be enough to watch it, says Ian Young in Cambridgeshire. So, The English, which is on iPlayer.
Yes, so I've watched 3 episodes, the third of which I watched upstairs in your house last night, having watched the first two. Written and directed by Hugo Blix, who directed the BBC drama The Honourable Woman, which won a Peabody. Did you see that?
No,
me neither. Emily Blunt is Lady Cornelia Locke, who comes to the West in 1890s looking for the man that she believes to have killed her son. She meets, is it Chaska Spencer? Is that how I pronounce the name?
Something like that.
Chaska Spencer's Eli Whip, who was born in the Pawnee Nation, then was with the US military. He's now en route to Nebraska, where he is owed land because he gave service to the army. He has a, you know, the right to claim land,
and he wears an army uniform.
Yes, although everyone keeps telling him, yeah, good luck with that, because the whole impression is that he's been, you know, he's
duped.
He's not going to get what's coming to him. And in the very first episode, their paths cross in a way which I don't want to give anything away for anyone who hasn't seen any of it. I've said I've only seen the first 3 episodes. I know you've seen pretty much the whole thing. It is worth saying that in the first episode, some people who look like they are going to be key players in the rest of the drama
aren't. Well, I did say actually last week.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yes, that Toby, it says Emily Blunt. Oh, it's great. Toby Jones, great. Kieran Hines, great.
Great.
And if you're hoping that they make it beyond the first episode, then you'll be disappointed.
Well, there is a line when Emily Blunt's character says, you know, just think back. Just think back. Just recently, we were the people who were in danger, and now everyone else is dead except us,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of the setup. And then she says to him, look, will you come with me on my quest? And he says, no. But yes, but no, but yes. And as far as I am in the drama so far, they both have their own individual quests. There's a whole bunch of stuff about whether she knows the difference between north, south, east and west, and whether she knows where she's going. And en route, so far in the version, in how far I am, they've got to a point whereby they have parted ways, but temporarily. But, you know, the ways will come back together again. And en route, they meet a series of... Well, in the thing that I've just watched, they come across a wagon which has been looted by... Is it bushwhackers, they call them? Bushwhackers?
I wouldn't presume to know.
But I think there's a word they use in the programme.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, in which terrible things have happened and have left them holding the baby, literally. So it's an interesting drama. I have to say I'm not completely sold. I haven't watched all of it yet. I've only watched the first 3 episodes. Here's what I think. I think Emily Blunt is great in anything, and I would honestly watch Emily Blunt reading her Christmas cards because I think she's terrific. She her presence is very modern. She has a lot of mannerisms that are very kind of out of keeping with the period setting, as indeed does that of her cohort, who, and you put your finger on this for me when you said, you know, I think the thing with Eli Whip is that he is a very modern character.
Well, he looks as though he's just stepped in off the high street, you know, and he looks great. His hairstyling seems to be very contemporary.
Because he's got a kind of mohawk.
Yeah. Thing. But again, it looks, I mean, other people who know about these things will, I'm sure, tell us, but he looks like he's from 2022.
But it's more to me to do with the way in which the dialogue between them. Now, this may be simply a stylistic thing that it's not making any concessions to getting the period detail correct. And I know this is now going to sort of, there'll be a welter of things that actually the period detail is correct. The dialogue sounded to me, the dialogue between those two characters, as opposed to the dialogue in the rest of the piece, sounded to me like it was very modern. Now, I quite like that because I actually quite like that the relationship that's starting to build between the two of them. And of course, the thing begins with this voiceover by Emily Blunt, which sort of sets up how, you know, there is going to be an, you know, important side to that relationship. The titles at the beginning have got that kind of almost, you know, pulp fiction, almost Tarantino-ish, you know, images, which again sort of slightly sets the tone. And there is this use of very modern-sounding song over, actually, the episodes that I've seen, which comes towards the end of each episode, in which is a kind of an emotional thing is happening, and then a song will come in that tells you that emotional thing will happen. And there is a great love of a shot which recurs throughout the drama, as much as I've seen so far, of a flat horizon, an absolutely gorgeously cinematic sky, because the whole thing is on, it's a widescreen, it's made for television, it's a widescreen production, and figures on the very, very horizon and the distance on a horse, or one on a horse and one on foot, or one in a wagon, and one, you know, just outlined in silhouette, which looks beautiful, but there is a bit like, yeah, okay, that looks beautiful, and you have shot a lot of this at magic hour, and that's great. I am, if I'm honest about it, I don't believe in either of the lead characters. I'm enjoying spending time with them, and I'm enjoying watching the drama, but I don't believe in either of them.
Is that because it's very stylized? It's certainly not gritty and realistic. You don't think I'm genuinely here in the 1820s?
No, I don't think for one minute I'm here in the 1820s.
Or 1860,
was later is 1890s, isn't it?
Well, they've just, yes, you're right. So they've fought in the Civil War, so it's after the American Civil War.
No, I don't believe in them. I'm enjoying spending time in their company, but I don't believe that they are who they say they are, or that it is when it says it is. So I'm kind of watching it as a construction in which I'm thinking, from Emily Blunt's point of view, this is a, you know, good, rounded, interesting character with stuff to do. And obviously in the first episode, you discover that far from being helpless, because there's the whole thing about, can you shoot a rifle? Yes. Can you, you know, skills with a bow and arrow, all that kind of stuff, that she's very, very resourceful. And I can see entirely why that character would be a great character to play. I just don't actually believe in any of it. You?
I tend to give up on series a lot sooner than the good lady ceramicist. So she'll stick with it. I'm kind of annoyed by all of those things.
By all of which things? So do you share my reservations?
I think if people... Now, clearly our listeners love it because they've written to us to say, can you watch the English? It just felt too stylized to me. And I don't believe that, because often, you know, when they come into a small homestead or a small town or something, it's literally just the facade. You know, it doesn't look like an actual place where anyone is going to be living.
No.
So they're not trying to make you think that this is realistic. And I just found that to be an obstruction.
Shasky Spencer, as the good lady ceramicist, her indoors, pointed out whilst I was in your house yesterday, is also Sam in the Twilight Saga.
Yeah. And he's very good.
But just he feels like a modern construct, as does she. There is a very, very good scene with her and with Emily Blunt and Kieran Hines having the meal when he offers her the prairie oysters. And she does the thing about the way in which she eats the prairie oysters, which actually that is very Tarantino kind of exploitation
for
movie.
The brief time that Kieran and Toby are there, they certainly, that's right. they enjoy it.
But that's the best eating in a way that suggests, yeah, don't mess with me.
Exactly. Okay, so The English is on BBC iPlayer. Your suggestions, please, for the stuff that we miss, but we should have been watching, and then we'll take you up on your word. We'll watch it and then talk about it. Let us know. correspondence@curbandamayo.com. Thank you very much. Don't forget, take three with you shortly with our questions.